Hey everyone, Josh Nason of WrestlingObserver.com here, welcoming you to episode 99 of Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Happy WrestleMania weekend, it's finally here. Been a pretty wild 24 hours or so in the world of mixed martial arts. For those that are looking for stuff outside of pro wrestling, it is practically like pro wrestling. Conor McGregor getting arrested and arraigned today as I record this. And let's see what else happened. Max Holloway missing weight. Or not be able to make weight, medically unclear to fight because of the weight cut. And as of right now, we still do not know what the main event of 223 is going to be. And I'm sure maybe by the time you listen to this, we'll have some sort of idea waiting on a UFC press conference to kick off here. But what a complete cluster F of in mourning and really 24 hours for the UFC. However, this episode of the show is not, and despite all the craziness, I wanted to bring this show to you guys because it's one of the favorite ones that I've ever done and someone that I have listened to for quite some time when it comes to podcasts and sports media and all that good stuff. The one and only Richard Deitch joins me on Josh Nason's Punch Out this week. He is he was a former sports media critic or columnist rather for Sports Illustrated and is now with The Athletic, which is a pay content sports site that you may have heard of, and also is going to be doing some radio work in Toronto, and a pretty popular guy in the sports media scene and also a big wrestling fan, someone that's talked to Dave Meltzer before. So I was happy to get almost about 45 minutes of Richard's time. We recorded this on Thursday afternoon, early afternoon. This was completely before the Conor McGregor madness from yesterday. So we didn't obviously address that, but we talked about a lot of stuff. We talked about his consumption of wrestling media when it comes to WrestleMania week, Ronda Rousey and WWE, how her recent ESPN gaffes may affect her in the future and kind of how they can massage that and address some of those issues that a lot of us kind of see with her personality when it comes to that and so on. We'll see. We talked about UFC and WWE TV deals and media deals. So Richard gave some interesting perspective there, as well as the Andre the Giant documentary and all types of other stuff. We kind of jumped around a little bit. And this is a really fun episode for me to do. And I think you guys are going to enjoy it as well. So without further ado, let's get to it. Richard Deitch of The Athletic and Sportsnet in Toronto and Fan 590 in Toronto, talking all about sports media with pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Enjoy. Our guest today is someone I've listened to for quite some time and someone that's been a friend to both the wrestling and MMA business for also quite some time. Have interviewed guys like Paul Heyman, Conrad Thompson, Errol Helwani, and even our own Dave Meltzer. And after years with Sports Illustrated, he is now with pay content site The Athletic and soon Toronto's Fan 590 and also Sportsnet. He also recently relaunched his sports media podcast available where you listen to podcasts. And we welcome sports media columnist and speaker Richard Deitch to Josh Nason's Punch Out. And Richard, we'll start you with the real hardball questions first. Who gave you more problems in their formative years, your twins or Jimmy Traina?
First of all, good to be with you. Any entity that is associated with Dave Meltzer, I am a fan and supporter of. So on top of that, good to be here as well. My twins are much harder to deal with than Traina, to be very blunt. You know, Traina, on the one hand, when I was at Sports Illustrated, I only had to deal with him for a couple hours and, you know, he'd occasionally take a break and leave the room where the twins never leave. I mean, I do love them. God bless them. But, my God, if you get a couple of toddlers in a bad mood, it's hell on earth.
I remember occasionally you mention him on the podcast, and I have an 18 month old, so I can somewhat relate, but I can't imagine two 18 months old. It's, God bless you. Certainly there. So obviously you move, we'll just kind of catch people up real quick. Again, you moved to The Athletic and have done, did an intro column there. You restarted the Sports Media Podcast episode 0 last week. And, obviously the big move, to two Toronto media entities as well, I guess just kind of give us the high level overview of why the move now and, what you're hoping to look to do here the rest of the year and beyond.
Yeah, there's nothing more boring than, you know, people talking about career stuff. So I'll try to do as fast as I can. The Sports Illustrated decision was very, very hard. It was an excruciating decision. I've been at SI for essentially, that's been my singular job as, postgraduate school as an adult. I will always have immense fondness and love for the place. The reason I left had nothing to do with my job, which was great. They offered me a great package to stay, more than fair. But the thing that Sports Illustrated could not control, or my bosses could not control, was what was going to happen when the Meredith Corporation sold them. Time Inc., which had owned Sports Illustrated for a long, long time, sold their company to Meredith. So Time Inc., People Magazine, Fortune, Time Magazine, et cetera. And then Meredith, because they're not in the business of Newsweeklies, it seemed rather obvious they were going to sell the Sports Illustrateds, the Times, the Fortunes. And they finally announced that they would. I had made my decision before they formally announced that. And the reason I decided was I just wanted to have a little control of what my future was. It's still not clear who Sports Illustrated is going to be sold to. If it turns out to be somebody with deep pockets who believes in the product, who wants to continue it for many, many years and invest in journalism, that'll be an awesome, awesome result for SI. The possibility, of course, is that Meredith doesn't give it to a steward that has those ideals and fits into what Sports Illustrated has done, and they just go for the highest bidder, and then it might not be as it won't be as good for Sports Illustrated. So I just wanted a little bit of control. I really like what The Athletic's doing. I believe that people have to pay for great content in order for great content to exist. I really liked the people that they had hired, so I took a chance on this fairly new entity, and we'll see what happens in terms of that. The Toronto thing was separate. I'd been doing Bob McCown's radio show for many, many years. He's probably the most famous sports talk host in Canada, and they just really almost out of the blue just gave me a call and said they'd really liked what I had done. I had gone up there for a couple weeks over the last couple of years to do a week's of shows, and they just asked me, hey, would you ever be interested in coming up here to to do this on a regular or full-time basis? And it's kind of a surprise, and the more I talk about it with my wife, we love Toronto, it's an amazing city, and we just decided to go for it. So that was really much more of a fluke than anything else. They Rogers just had an interest in this, and then once I sort of wrapped myself around the possibility of leaving the country and moving to another city, then it just got really, like, the prospect of it got really exciting. And I mean, I've been to Toronto many, many times. I can't say enough great things about it. Canada's a great place. Toronto's an amazing city. And so we're going to try it for a couple of years, no guarantees it works out long term, but that's how that came about, very much for my relationship with this show.
Yeah. I have to echo the sentiments about Toronto. It is amazing. I went up there for a work conference late last year. It is, it was my second time, third time in the city. It's just, you just walk around. It's just, there's something, it's hard to explain unless you've been there, but it is just an incredible, just a really incredible place where it's unlike anything else.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Toronto is it's a world-class city, obviously. It's the biggest city in Canada. It's a global city. So you're getting everything in terms of culture and food and art and sports. But I agree with you. There's something unique to Toronto in that there's a lot of cities that kind of preach diversity, but Toronto really, really is diverse. You walk down the streets of Toronto and you'll see 50 different ethnicities on a given day. It's sort of really, I'm not saying it's it's not Xanadu, no place is, but it really, if you're looking for a city that sort of offers all the amenities you want of a big city, it has it. Again, a lot of construction still, a lot of building. It's very expensive for Canadians, no doubt about that. But it just felt like a more comfortable New York to me. And that was very, very appealing. I love New York. My intention was to live here forever. But that's what I liked about Toronto is it didn't feel so different than where I was coming from. Mm. And so I'm a big fan of the city for sure.
So the opposite of that feeling is Boston, which I am about an hour 20 outside. And
a lot of my family is from Boston, so I have great fondness for that city. But it can be crowded. It's small.
So I have a fun fact for you with one of your old friends, Kirk Minahan of the Kirk and Callahan Show, WEEI, that you've obviously have been on Kirk's podcast before and on their show. And you know, Kirk is a very unique personality. A fun fact, he, for some reason, has the Wrestling Observer newsletter Twitter account blocked. And I have no idea why. Isn't that the most random thing?
I'm not surprised that he has a Wrestling Observer account at all. I don't listen to that morning show daily. But there are times where I definitely will check in, and there are a lot of times where I'll do on demand audio for them. So I don't think I've ever heard them talk about wrestling on the air. Maybe that's a Callahan thing, but it would not surprise me that Minahan's a wrestling fan. He loves conflict and trafficking and drama sometimes. So that doesn't surprise me at all.
He definitely is. He's been, so the most surreal thing over the past couple of weeks is to hear Dave Meltzer's name dropped a lot, both on the morning show, because Callahan hates wrestling and loves to mock it.
Right.
Kirk just brought his son to a wrestling event on Saturday at the TD Garden. And I think his son's actually doing a WrestleMania preview on his podcast today. But it's just all the Gronk stuff. When Gronkowski at WWE, when that was a rumor, Dave was on the afternoon show. So that kind of got talked about. It was just really surreal. And also kind of like, I think sometimes we forget how well Dave is known outside our MMA and wrestling bubble, and that when it comes to a wrestling journalist, and you know this, I mean, he's seen as the guy.
There's no one in the world of wrestling let me stop for a second and phrase this better. Dave Meltzer is far and away the most well-known person in wrestling writing. Now, he's obviously a wrestling journalist, but not everybody is going to connotate somebody to journalism more versus writing. But in terms of somebody who has provided like the printed word of professional wrestling, there's no one more well-known than Dave Meltzer. And he's been doing it for so many decades that I think you're right. In that bubble, in the UFC, WWE bubble, you probably don't realize just how many people he has impacted with his words or podcasts or whatever else. This is a guy who's worked for the National, which is just incredible to think about in 2018, that this attempt in 1990-1991 to create a National Sports Daily, Meltzer had a column in there. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, he's not going to probably be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame for obvious reasons, but he would be one of the seminal figures, in my opinion, in terms of influencing professional wrestling in America. Is he at the level of Hogan or Vince or Michaels or Andre? No. But for these additional figures, if you sort of take away the performers and those who run the sport, he would be very, very high.
I would agree. Let's get some of the meat of the conversation here. And it is WrestleMania week, as you know. Festivities truly kick off today with just a myriad of events, both for WWE and then also for the various indie promotions that are running there. It is a packed few days, Thursday through next Tuesday, down in New Orleans. And obviously, yeah, as I mentioned at the top, you're a friend of wrestling. You've talked about it before, and obviously well-versed in that field. And obviously, you talked to Dave and Paul Heyman, Conrad Thompson, some of the others I mentioned. What is your consumption going to be with WrestleMania and kind of everything going on in the next couple of days?
Well, I think my consumption, I'm not the diehard who's going to be like watching everything from Friday to Sunday. One, I just don't have the time, just given little kids and other responsibilities. You know, it'd be so fun to do it, just to sit in front of WWE Network or just read everything I could. I've never been to WrestleMania. I think that would be actually really fascinating to sort of do the weekend. So my WrestleMania experience is going to be limited to Sunday. And it's going to be limited to watching the show. I don't know if I could watch everything, but I would try to watch as much as I can. And I will read over the next couple of days some previews of it from writers that I really like. You know, I think I've always read guys like David Shoemaker. I'll check out Cape Side Seats. See what Mel's just talking about. So I'll do a little bit of prep, in terms of what to look for on this. But I think my consumption, for the most part, really is going to be limited to the show itself and then to the reaction of the show.
Yeah. So when it comes to the how the media is with Mania this week, I mean, this is obviously WWE's biggest week of the year. And when basically every website that kind of shuns wrestling for the most part, for the rest of the year, for some reason, you know, this week, this is their focus. And I see, you know, one of your past guests, Charlotte Wilder, for example, went and did, basically trained in pro wrestling for a few weeks and learned how to do that. You see kind of these ancillary kind of outlets kind of come together, and all of a sudden they're like, okay, let's kind of generate this buzz. In your dealings with WWE from a media perspective, and also all the consumption and all that stuff, essentially this is their Super Bowl week. How do they compare to other major sports, like the Super Bowl, the NFL, the Super Bowl, and the World Series, things like that, and how that kind of that groundswell builds to their big week? How do you compare them?
I think as a public relations apparatus, I actually think they do a phenomenal job of getting attention and attraction for that weekend. And they're able to do a lot of that, in my opinion, through social media. I don't know who at the company made that a priority, let's say 4 years ago, but they have such a collective weight when you take all the performers and the WWE apparatus itself that they really, really can get to a lot of people via their Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. There's a reason why Raw trends every time it's on Twitter. And I think that's really first and foremost where they really, really get a lot of attention and a lot of buzz. They certainly have multiple PR people who are sending stuff out, you know, your traditional releases. The other thing, and I think this is something that they've always tried to do, but they've gotten, they've gotten better at it, and two, the world has changed, so it's allowed them to get more publicity, is they've always tried, prior to WrestleMania, to get on traditional sports outlets, particularly ESPN. And they've really done a good job in the last couple of years of doing that. You know, whether it's getting Rousey out there, or Roman Reigns, you know, they're able to cross over, or they've been able to cross over of late to get their people in traditional outlets to promote WrestleMania. For example, not too long ago, it may have been within this last month, I think I heard Alexa Bliss on 590 in Toronto.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was a Toronto show or something, but the point is, this is Alexa Bliss 4 weeks before WrestleMania going on a Toronto radio station and promoting what is going to be coming up for the WWE, and in this case, WrestleMania. So just magnify that or times that by, there's a million of these performers who are probably doing that all across the country. So I think where they've really succeeded is they've just gotten there's interest now in traditional sports outlets because I think they know that some of their audience is interested in this content. So I think they've done a great job for WrestleMania. They don't do some of their other shows that can't get this kind of buzz, but for WrestleMania, they've really figured out the way to just get so much attention for it. It probably helps too that it's in April and not competing against, you know, the NFL playoffs NBA finals. You know, it's early in the baseball season. They have a pretty good, I feel like, time of the year for it as well, where they have a chance to sort of own the weekend.
One of the things too, I think has helped and something that, you know, most, I would say old school wrestling fans or traditionalists, I guess you could say, have had issues with for years. And I think people just kind of finally have to accept it is, you know, WWE, Vince has always wanted the WWE to be seen as a entertainment entity and not just a pro wrestling entity. And I think this move in the past, I don't know if it's been really 5 years, maybe 10 years or so, kind of the reality era where they just haven't like let fans behind the curtain and the world behind the curtain. They basically ripped the curtain down, burned it, and just said, come on back. And it basically are like they treat them, their talent, like they are actors, like they are Broadway stage people, like they're actual true performers instead of just being quote unquote wrestlers. And I know that chafes some people, but I think when it comes to, and you know this, like when it comes to the outside media world, outside the bubble, you know, they seem to like that.
Just look at the popularity of Total Divas. Look at how much The Rock and Cena have blown up in the public's consciousness. Kayfabe was very much an important thing to wrestlers, I understand, in the 70s and the 80s, and you know, my favorite wrestler as a kid was Roddy Piper, and he sort of really lived that. You know, he really, it physically seemed to pain him sometimes to sort of take you behind the curtain and let you know what was going on. But I think that taking behind the curtain has really, really helped. It's helped the popularity. People want to, you know, I'm very interested in sort of the behind the scenes of wrestling, sort of how this comes together, how guys do promos. Like, that's really interesting to me, you know, at where I am as a wrestling fan. And it's one of the reasons, obviously, I love the Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard, because that is basically a podcast that takes you behind the McMahon curtain. So I think it's really, really interesting to do that. Now, that said, they kick you behind the curtain. They're still playing you a lot of times, and they're still acting.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they're still basically doing works behind the curtain. But that, I think, is far more interesting than, you know, just having two brawlers in the ring. You know, you can appreciate their physicality, you appreciate their wrestling acumen, but there has to be more to that. Mm-hmm. You can't, the days of, you know, pitting Bob Backlund against some other guy who's got a lot of, like, wrestling talent, you know, pure physical ability, is done. It's a show. And McMahon is correct about that. You have to keep people interested. And part of the ways to keep people interested is all this ancillary stuff that you see on WWE television and elsewhere.
And we'll get to their TV future in a minute. I want to ask you about Ronda Rousey. You mentioned her a minute ago, and she had a pretty interesting media week. Last week, a couple ESPN interviews, obviously the, you know, some better than others. Obviously the clips of the Golic interview were played around quite a bit. The awkward exchange with Max Kellerman. They kind of a very interesting, I wouldn't say dilemma, but situation with Rousey, in that she really has not publicly got over, or even privately got over, her defeats. And just, there's something there for those of us in the MMA world that just, that broke with her. And we're still not really sure what that is, and we never really got a full explanation. And now they have, WWE has a star who they want to get out there to speak to mainstream media, but she doesn't, they want to ask her, of course, about the MMA years. And because we haven't really seen much as far as WWE yet, but she doesn't really seem to want to talk about them. And it's kind of this weird, like, situation where there's this thing, but they don't really, she doesn't want to talk about the thing, but the media wants to talk about that thing. It's just, what did you make of her media the past couple of weeks, and how WWE can best use her going forward when it comes to as a public role like that?
Yeah, it's been strange, and I like Ronda Rousey a lot. I appreciate her athleticism. I love the fact that she was an Olympian. I have great respect for her athletic career. You know, I'm not so hardcore into MMA, so, you know, I concede that I don't know the great women fighters prior to her. I'm sure there were, and they deserve their credit. But I like Rousey. I found her interesting. And I don't understand sort of the standoffishness sometimes that she has delivered in some of these interviews. People really want to like her. Because she's had an interesting career and she's been an interesting athlete. And part of your job, in my opinion, when you're doing this stuff, is I don't want anybody to be a fake, but it's the same thing when Greg Popovich just, like, goes too over the line with being kind of a jerk to sideline reporters. Yep. There should be at least sort of a professionalism that goes back and forth with interviews, even if the questions are stupid. And Ronda's going to get stupid questions, including on ESPN sometimes. But that's just part of being a performer, in my opinion. That's just part of the deal. And I hope she embraces this a little bit more. I have no doubt that the MMA stuff still stings, but, like, again, you know, there's a reason why you are a star in the WWE. There's a reason why you're being paid this millions of dollars. And part of that is publicity. So I hope that we see a little bit more from her in terms of give and take. I understand the frustrations of dumb questions, but she has to know now that, you know, part of her sell job is to sell. Now, if she's going to sell herself as a heel, then she could do heel interviews. That's fine. But she's not even doing heel interviews. She's just being a little bit standoffish. And so I hope that changes. And I expect it might, as she sort of becomes more familiar with how things work with the WWE. And then in terms of storyline, they're going to have to figure that out. She's not the easiest person to plan for. Yeah. I assume she's going to tap Stephanie McMahon out and try to get her over with the crowd at WrestleMania. But then they're going to have to figure out, like, who is she? What is she? And are there rivalries that you can set up with her? I mean, are you going to have her just go in and, you know, and fight different women each week? That seems, I don't think that's going to work, or that's not going to happen. Obviously, guys like you and Dave would know this far better. But my sense is that they're going to try to build her up like a Goldberg-ish type of figure. Maybe not as many wins, maybe not as many appearances. And then this is just a guess. Set it up for next year where she's undefeated going up against somebody at WrestleMania where she's solo and not with, you know, not being aided by Angle or not being aided by the McMahon storyline. And there's a lot of talk of putting Heyman with her. I could see that as well, especially if Brock leaves. That could be pretty interesting too.
Yeah, I think with Rousey, she has to be a special attraction like Brock. I mean, Brock's not on every week.
And, I agree.
You know, I think as we've seen in the content era that we're in, that a little bit less is better than a little bit more, even though, you know, networks and so on seem to disagree. I think they got to keep her off TV. She can't be one of the gang. I think she has to be this kind of like special attraction. We really don't see her compete on TV that much. But yeah, I think the winning streak and building up to, I mean, they're not really known for their long-term planning, but I think if they can kind of build to something big a year from now, obviously she's already essentially booked to be on SummerSlam, which will be in August. So I think, yeah, I think as a special attraction, you know, she definitely still can be something. I'm really curious how this year plays out with her as she has failure, you know, in wrestling. Is full of failure, just like any performance when you're in front of a live studio audience, so to speak. And, you know, we've seen what happens when she's failed the MMA. And my hope is that she, and the training that she's going to get and the mentorship she's going to get, that's going to be a big part of it. I hope that they teach her that. And if she really gets that, failure is part of the daily gig here. And how you adapt to that, and especially adapt that quickly, is going to, you know, help you either hinder your success or power you to bigger and better things.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said there. Actually, the one thing that I really agree on is making her a special attraction. I actually thought Roman Reigns' best promo ever, or best promos ever, is when he's been blasting Cena as a part-time guy. That's works, like, because you can get the crowd with you, and it wouldn't be the worst thing if somebody's trying to challenge Ronda next year. You sort of do the same thing. You sort of mock her for what you mocked Brock with. But, the WWE needs to use her less than more to – You don't want her. I don't want to see her as much as Nia Jax. I don't want to see her as much as AJ Styles. I think you gotta sort of use the Lesnar format, and, you know, every 6 weeks or something like that, the music hits and she surprises us and feels like an event. If you're at the arena, it feels like you just got something special.
Let's go to some TV talk. And we talked with Andrew Buchholz last week, a guest I first heard on your sports media podcast, and was glad to have him on last week. Talk a little bit about UFC and WWE TV deals. I want to get your perspective on, kind of just from the start, like when these networks and streaming entities, wherever you want to consider them, are looking at both UFC and WWE and looking at what they want to pay for rights and how they fit in, what ultimately are they looking for? Are they looking for to kind of just more the ratings, more the fact that they can just simply fill content? Is it a little mix of everything? What are they looking for when they're deciding whether or not to kick the tires on both entities?
What are these companies looking for in terms of creating an over-the-top service, a streaming service?
No, so say like I guess we'll start with like, so with Fox looking to retain UFC, for example, you know, they're looking at, we have a sports property that we know that's been ingrained with us for, I think it's about 6 years or so at this point. And they're looking, okay, we want to retain them, but at what cost? Obviously, they're not going to get UFC's not going to get the $400 million, I think, that they were looking for. But in their in their decision to whether retain or maybe look in WWE's direction, what is really driving that decision?
I got you. Okay, so I think, and again, there are people who have reported this far deeper than me, including John Olrand, who I feel like is that sort of the leader of this kind of reporting. But what Fox has to do is Fox has to make a decision like they do on all properties. What's the price point where we can invest in this property and make money in this property for the long term? So UFC, obviously, as has been reported many times, we're trying to cut a media rights deal that averaged $450 million. That's a huge increase over the rights fee Fox currently pays, which I believe was $120 million, and then it jumped to $160 million in its final year.
Right.
So if you're Fox, what you're doing is, and you know, you'd have to be inside the boardroom to figure out, what is that number where if we bid on this property, UFC, we can in turn create programming, create advertising where we can make money on it. Is that number 200 million? Is that number 300 million? Obviously, UFC's number is going to be higher than what Fox is. And the question is, can they come to some kind of agreement where it works for both of them? I think if you're Fox, you've really gone down the road pretty far with UFC. It's one of your core properties at the moment, and you are the network that is most connected to them, at least on cable. So I think there's value in retaining them, because I think you've spent a lot of money over the last 3 or 4 years, letting your audience know that this content exists on your network, on your website, and you are a part of UFC. So as a general rule, you want to retain properties that you've had, unless you think that property is, downward property or not going that way. So I think Fox wants to retain. The question is, can they retain again at the right price? And the other question, at least when it comes to UFC, is like, what can you do with some of these, with the most valuable commodity that UFC has, and that's their pay-per-view product. And I wonder if any deal, especially with Fox, that heads forward with UFC somehow gets them into some of those better, higher quality bouts. Because obviously that to me is the most, that's the biggest asset that UFC has, and that would be the asset that Fox would want, or those kind of fights, because obviously they can make money on that. In terms of if they don't get UFC, let's say it goes somewhere else, Turner, wherever, ESPN, et cetera, I think they'd absolutely look at the WWE. They have eliminated so much of their scripted programming on Big Fox that they have some pretty big holes in terms of scheduling stuff. They, especially on Big Fox, they could certainly do Raw on Big Fox on Monday. I think they could do SmackDown as well. FS1 would love to have any kind of programming that would bring numbers in that the WWE does, because outside of live programming, the WWE stuff would probably beat FS1 stuff. So, yeah, I think they would be seriously interested. The only thing they'd have to think about, and it's a real one, is, we've made our bones as a traditional sports network. We do a lot of traditional sports, baseball, college basketball, college football, et cetera. How do we feel about the publicity of bringing in what is sports entertainment in addition to, these other sports? But I don't think, to me, I don't think the public would care about that. I think it would just make the channel more valuable. So I could totally see them having a significant interest in WWE if UFC doesn't work out. And I think you've seen some Fox executives making public appearances at WWE matches and having and announcing publicly, having conversations with WWE executives. So I guarantee that they are seriously considering it. Obviously, NBC USA would have a say in that as well. I would think that they would want to continue this relationship as well. That's been very valuable programming to them.
Yeah, and with the, I'm curious why, in your perception, why aren't groups like, NBC Sports Network or CBS Sports that have these, they're fighting for attention when people are going up and down the dial, whether it's, streaming services or traditional cable. Why aren't they interested in a UFC, which has the ability to help out some rings, at least for some nights of the week, and also with all the shoulder program as well? Why are they not interested? Is it just the fact that it is fighting, or is it something else?
No, I think it's just a lot of times it has to do with your executives think the product can work for your network. For CBS, for example, they have had nothing, if I'm right about this, they've never had anything to do with UFC. So it would be a very foreign property for them. CBS Sports Network is not a rated sports network, so that would I'm not sure if you're UFC, you want to be there. You're really not getting any kind of eyeballs on your product. And again, if you're a CBS or an NBC, are you willing to pay $300 million for this product? Can you monetize it? NBC would be more of a suitor for UFC, although I'm just, I'd have to look at their schedule on NBCSN to see where it would go. And, they have a long-term hockey commitment. During the winter months, they have the Olympics. So if you're UFC, you'd have to ask yourself, are we okay from like not being on the air for a month when NBC goes to, Beijing or Tokyo?
Yep.
So, there's some factors there on the UFC side. I've never heard either of those two networks having massive interest in the UFC. I don't think that's a knock on the UFC. I think they're just in different businesses at the moment. the Foxes and the Turners, they're looking for acquisitions. They're looking to figure out new ways or new avenues that can get younger people into their tent. So that's why you've heard their names kicked around. And obviously, digital players would naturally be interested in talking to the UFC because they have a very, very young audience and coveted males between 18 and 34. And I think that would be of interest to them. Obviously, if you're UFC, you probably want to be on some kind of traditional cable platform just because I think that's your best bet to get a ton of eyeballs. You know, I don't know if you would at this point, you know, like if you want to just commit to an Amazon or commit to a Facebook. While obviously 15 years from now, that might be the right play. I think there's still value in being part of some kind of cable entity.
Any final predictions of where both are going to go?
I basically, honestly, just followed Ole Rand on this because I have literally, I don't have the sources he does in this stuff. He seems to believe that the last thing I heard from him is he thought that Fox would not retain and that they would head elsewhere. So we'll see. I think the thing I'm interested more than anything else, more than where they end up, is what that final number is. Because I think that rights number is going to tell you, I think, a little something about some other rights deals heading forward. You know, will the UFC get closer to the $400 million mark that they want, or will it be closer to the $200 million mark that Fox wants? That's going to tell you a little something about sports rights for some of these non-NFL type of properties. So that's going to be the interesting one. The one thing I can guarantee is I will not be breaking the story. Trust me on this. That will be another sports business, sports media reporter for sure.
Couple quick hitters to wrap us up here. I am fascinated by the fact that Ari Emanuel is negotiating both deals as the essentially as the owners of UFC and as being one of the heads of Endeavor. I think it's something that's just no one's really talking about that much. But to me, it's just completely fascinating. Am I alone in this interest?
No, I mean you're not alone. I'm sure you know you could work for the Hollywood Reporter or Variety. Those guys are always interested in all that
there
stuff.
You go.
But you know like in the end, you know, there's that old adage, like, you know, who wins if a television show or a television talent tanks? Well, the agents always win because they always get paid. So in that case, Ari Emanuel is in a great position in terms of controlling so much of, you know, of this. The one thing is, again, like you do want, I don't want to say UFC, those who bought UFC sort of overvalued UFC, and they probably did. But, you know, you don't – I would just be – those who sort of think, like, that the property is not of interest, I think should just be careful because, you know, you're only a Ronda Rousey or a Conor McGregor away from basically having the sport, like, massively lead all the headlines. So it's just – you know, it's boxing is not the perfect example, but that's what with these sports that are individual sports where a singular personality can really transfix people. You know, the UFC, if they can find themselves another McGregor or a Rousey, the value of that business just goes sky high. The problem is, of course, that's not easy to do.
Mm-hmm. Andre the Giant documentary. Have you seen it yet?
I have.
What do you think?
I thought it was terrific. I did a long piece for The Athletic with the director, Jason Hare.
Yep.
And I thought it was a pretty thoughtful and honest representation of Andre. They didn't go so deep into all the myths and, you know, crazy drinking and eating stories. They presented a pretty interesting portrait of him. No doubt that, you know, Vince, who's plays a lot in the piece, you know, gave his sort of perspective on this, but you know, they went to France and they tracked down Andre's brother and you got a real sense of who Andre was before he became, you know, quote unquote, Andre the Giant. And I thought that was really interesting just to get a sense of who this guy was as a child before he grew into this, you know, literally and figuratively enormous person. And he had a very tough life. You know, even with the fame and even with everything else, it was very difficult to be Andre the Giant at 7'4" with the health problems he had. And so, yeah, I found it really, really compelling. I don't know if anybody, you know, it's always been the holy grail for documentarians to try to nail that. And I think this guy did about as good a job as you could. there's probably never going to be a perfect Andre doc, but I thought this was really good.
Yep, I would agree. I haven't seen it yet, but we talked to Jason a couple weeks on this show, and then Dave also talked to him as well. And he's been doing a lot of media. He his approach going into it, I think, was sound, and he was really, and I mean, this guy has produced some of the most interesting and engaging, and in case of the Fab Five, the most run sports documentaries on TV. So I'm fascinated to see this. Finally, one of your favorite topics.
Yeah, by the way, I didn't mean to interrupt you. The one thing I want to say is just because you brought up a good point, and it's worth noting. I think he really was the right filmmaker in this sense. He's not a wrestling fan. And I think he came to it without any kind of preconceived notions or preconceived ideas about Andre. And I think that was the director to have, like a guy or a woman who just did not know much about Andre or was not like a hardcore wrestling fan where you'd already have these preconceived notions. So in that sense, I think you nailed it.
Excellent. Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's I think that's going to be a big benefit. Looking forward to seeing it there. Final question, your favorite four letters, ESPN. They are obviously pretty in deep with WWE. We saw what they were pretty much had the exclusive when it came to the whole Rousey signing with WWE deal, and they have the section, which is, you know, come under a lot of scrutiny from traditional media and non-sport, non-wrestling fans and so on and so forth. You know, their coverage is not exactly, I guess, what you'd expect from them covering other sports. As we sit here at WrestleMania season 2018, I think they've had this for well over a year now. What's your grade or what's your viewpoint on how they cover the sport and how they could improve?
How ESPN is covering the WWE?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Dave here on this. I think they basically decided that they're more of a PR agency than a journalistic enterprise. That doesn't mean that they haven't had some interesting stuff. They've had some profiles that I've definitely read, and you know, I've enjoyed sometimes ESPN, the wrestlers going on ESPN. But they're not covering the sport with any kind of journalistic bent or covering sports entertainment. So many non-wrestling fans get mad when you say sport, but they do athletic things. So
right,
like,
yeah.
Relax. You know, you can call it that. I'm probably not as disappointed as others. I'm trying to remember if Dave said he was disappointed on my podcast. You know, I don't want to mischaracterize him. I don't think he was disappointed. I think he was curious as to how they would cover it, and they fulfilled his expectations on the low side of not doing it. So I'm not surprised. I think they want to essentially be partners with the WWE. They want to be a promotional vehicle. It helps them because they obviously can get wrestlers on anytime they want. And so they're going to be, you know, essentially they got the Ronda exclusive. They beat everybody on that, but it was gifted to them. And Ramona Shelburne is friends with Ronda, so I think that helps as well. And I'm a big Ramona fan, but, you know, I think she'd even sort of admit that was sort of, you know, hand-delivered to her and to ESPN. So I think they're going to get those kind of scoops. They're going to get breaking news before anybody else. But they're not covering this in any kind of journalistic way. I don't expect them to do any kind of reporting on the underbelly of WWE. I don't expect WWE officials to ever really get ticked off at them. So they're part of my WWE reading and diet, but they do something very different than Dave does.
Before we let you go, we'll give you the chance to channel your internal Roddy Piper and let it go here with letting people know where they can follow you on social, obviously your new endeavors and how people can engage. The floor is yours.
Oh, but yeah, Piper actually would do much better promos than me. I love the Cow Palace promo. I literally could watch Piper promos all day. There's nothing worse than self-promotion. So I'm not going to do it. How about that? I'm going to basically be Piper, drop the mic, and walk off. I'm not giving you anything. I'm not giving you my Twitter handle. I'm not giving you where you can listen to my podcast. I'm giving you absolutely nothing.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll be your Paul Heyman. I'll do it for you. You can follow him on Twitter, at Richard Deitch. You can obviously read his work at The Athletic. And look for his new, I don't want to say revamp, but his relaunch podcast under a new moniker. Wherever you download your podcast, just search for Richard Deitch Sports Podcast, and you'll be able to find it pretty easily. You can subscribe there, and also follow him on Twitter. Yeah, you can catch up with him. And if you go to Columbia, you can obviously see you do your thing in class, right?
Well, I'm not standing outside of the university waving. But yes, if you happen to be applying to the Columbia Graduate School of Journalism and you happen to be have an interest in sports, you will end up at one point seeing me. This is true.
Autographs and pictures are a separate cost, of course. Richard Deitch, this has been a lot of fun. Appreciate you joining me, and have a great WrestleMania week. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, and best of luck to you guys.
right. Big thanks to Richard Deitch for dropping by. Obviously, follow him on The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter. Hear him on The Athletic. Read him on The Athletic. And also soon to be Fan 590 in Toronto, and also Sportsnet as well. And he'll be obviously tweeting out all that stuff. As becomes pertinent, that was a big thrill for me. You may be able to tell that from the interview. I love those. I love all the podcasts I do, but I really like the ones where I can talk to people that initially I might thought have been long shots to get. And luckily, I was able to get some contact information, and given Dave's relationship with Richard, and he obviously knows our website, it was a lot easier to get him on the show. So I'm glad he did, especially during a busy week for both us and for him. Let's see what else we have. Obviously, all types of coverage on WrestlingObserver.com of WrestleMania week. All the festivities, all the results from Thursday shows are up. We'll have more stuff from Friday, I believe, 4 o'clock East Coast time, I think, is when the first show hits today. Hall of Fame tonight. Let's see, obviously, this UFC event tomorrow, which who knows what's going to happen, all that. And then we also have, let's see, obviously, TakeOver. God, all the things you forget. TakeOver, ROH, WrestleMania itself, and the list goes on and on, as they say. So keep it locked in WrestlingObserver.com all weekend for all the print news, and then also with audio. We have a ton of podcasts coming up, Wrestling Observer Live, Wrestling Observer Radio, and all that good stuff as well, keeping you updated. If you're not in New Orleans and want to keep up on all the action, there's no better way to do it. And then also, if you are in New Orleans, thanks for stopping by the Wrestling Observer Live mailbag. That audio is up on the site, and obviously we'll see you around the city. I won't. I am in New Hampshire right now, but obviously we have a lot of people down there, and appreciate you guys subscribing. You have a lot of choice in your podcast day. So the fact you spent any time with us is greatly appreciated, and something we definitely do not want to take for granted. So we'll call it good. So for Richard Deitch, I'm Josh Nason. Thanks for listening to another edition of Josh Nason's Punch Out. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.